Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY24 earnings conference call of Glenmark Life Sciences. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Soumi Rao from Glenmark Life Sciences. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Good morning, everyone. I welcome you all to the earnings call of Glenmark Life Sciences Limited for the quarter ended December 31st, 2023. From Glenmark Life Sciences, today we have with us Dr. Yasir Rawjee, our MD and CEO, and Mr. Tushar Mistry, our CFO. Our board has approved the results for the quarter ended December 31st, 2023. We have released the same to the stock exchanges and updated it on our website. Please note that the recording and transcript of this call will be available on the website of the company. Now I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that some of the information shared as part of this call, especially the information with respect to our plans and strategies, may contain certain forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties. These statements are based on the current expectations, forecasts, and assumptions that are subject to risks which could cause actual results to differ materially from these statements depending upon the economic conditions, government policies, and other incidental factors. Such statements should not be regarded by recipients as a substitute of their own judgment. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Our actual results may differ materially from those expressed in or implied by these forward-looking statements. With that, I invite Dr. Yasir Rawjee to say a few words. Thank you, and over to you, Dr. Rawjee.
So, Soumi, thanks. Good morning. Welcome to our earnings call. Wish you all a happy New Year. So as we get into the new year, just a quick overview in terms of what's happening in the industry overall. So things have picked up. Certainly, the U.S. has improved. Inflation also seems to be cooling down, which is a big positive. With respect to geopolitical issues, of course, these conflicts are not helping the situation, but it's manageable, I would say. There's an improvement from China in terms of the supply situation, and things have definitely eased. The domestic economy is also doing well, so we see a robust demand overall. This business with the Red Sea may have some impact, mainly on freight, but it also results in longer supply chains, so it would have some kind of inventory impact. We may have to stock up a little more, but let's see how that pans out. As far as our performance goes, we've had decent performance. We've had just under 6% growth on the top line. This is driven by an external business of just under 10% growth, and then GPL has been flattish this quarter. From a regional perspective, we've had solid growth in India, U.S., Latin America, and ROW markets, whereas the Europe business has been flattish. Japan has reported a degrowth because of some inventory at the customers that they built up in the last few quarters on account of launches. So as we guided in the previous quarters, CDMO has had a significant upturn in Q3. We've signed a new contract for a supply of API. This is a multi-year agreement, and the minimum offtake commitment is about $5 million. We expect that this contract will commercialize sometime next year, and it could also lead to significant expansion with this customer. Also, with respect to other clients, we've got other irons in the fire with respect to CDMO, and those are also progressing very nicely. Now, before getting into the pipeline, it's important that we emphasize that even though we've had a single-digit growth, the bottom-line growth has been much better because of our focus on niche products, cost management, and optimum utilization of our resources. So while top line has been a little soft, right, the bottom line continues very strongly. Now, in terms of product pipeline, we continue to file in various markets. So our DMF and CEP filings have crossed 500 as of December 31st, again driven largely by cardiovascular and CNS therapies. During the quarter, we added 4 new products to the pipeline with 1 high-potency API and 3 synthetic small molecules. So coming to high-potency API, we now have 13 products with an addressable market of $24 billion, and 3 products have been validated, and 4 products are in advanced stages. Now, before I conclude, I'd like to share an update on the Nirma acquisition. So we've received an approval from the Competition Commission of India and are waiting for some more approvals for completion of the open offer and so on. Now, once these steps are finalized and the deal is complete, we will proactively communicate to you, providing clear insights into our future strategy. Till then, I request your patience on this subject. As highlighted in the previous call, the core strategy of GLS will remain unchanged. Any new strategy developed will only be incremental to our core approach. In closing, I am optimistic of delivering stable growth in FY24, driven by a pretty solid order book in the external business, including CDMO business. However, we expect some slowdown in the GPL business, which might lead to slightly lower growth than initially projected for the year. So with that, I'll hand it over to Tushar, our CFO. Tushar, over to you.
Thank you, Dr. Yasir. Hello and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Q3 FY24 earnings call. I would like to briefly touch upon the key performance highlights for the quarter and 9 months ended 31st December 2023, and then we'll open the floor for questions and answers. Our revenue from operations for the quarter stood at 573 crores, a growth of 5.9% year-on-year, a degrowth of 3.8% on a sequential basis. This was driven by a steady 9.8% growth in external business, which was offset by a flattish GPL business. The gross profit for the quarter was at 331 crores, up 19.8% year-on-year. Gross margin for the quarter was at 57.7%, mainly on account of better product mix and lower input costs. EBITDA for the quarter was at 174 crores, up 14.6% year-on-year. EBITDA margin for the quarter was at 30.4%, driven by better gross margins. As mentioned in Q2 FY24 earnings call, employee costs remained elevated due to the bonus accruals based on the past performance of the management. The employee costs will remain higher for Q4 as well and then shall return to normalcy. The PAT for the quarter stood at 119 crores, a growth of 13.1% year-on-year, with PAT margins coming at 20.7%. Let me quickly discuss 9 months numbers as well. Revenue from operations for 9 months FY24 was at 1,747 crores, a growth of 13.4% year-on-year. Gross profit for 9 months was at 983 crores, up 22% year-on-year. Gross margin for 9 months expanded by 390 basis points to 56.3%. EBITDA was at 542 crores, up 17.3%, with margins at 31%. PAT for 9 months was at 373 crores, up 16.3% year-on-year. Moving on to the segmental performance for Q3 FY24, generic API revenues grew by 6.4% year-on-year to Rs. 511 crores, driven by strong growth in external business. CDMO business recovered strongly with revenue of Rs. 36 crores, a growth of 40.4% quarter-on-quarter and 27.2% year-on-year. I would also like to highlight that the new CDMO agreement, which Dr. Yasir alluded to in his opening remarks, improves our revenue visibility for the CDMO business in coming year. Looking at the therapeutic mix, CVS and CNS portfolio continues to lead the growth, with diabetes portfolio seeing good traction during the quarter. R&D expenditure for the quarter was at 18.4 crores, which was 3.2% of our sales. Touching upon the balance sheet and cash flow, movements, starting with working capital. Working capital remained stable during 9 months at 170 days. CapEx for 9 months was at 93 crores, and we expect to close FY24 with a CapEx of around 150 to 160 crores. We continue to remain a net debt-free company. For 9 months, FY24, we generated free cash flow of 221 crores with cash and cash equivalents of 236 crores on the books as of 31st December 2023. To conclude, as Dr. Yasir mentioned, our order book remains strong, and but Q4 is something that we are looking at as how it will get to. And with that, I would like to conclude my remarks, and we can open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may please press star and 1 on their touchtone phone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Tarang Agarwal from Old Bridge Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. I had three questions. One, if you could comment on the volume growth for the business for this quarter. The second question is, on the employee cost, the run rate at which we are running at currently, would it be prudent to presume this to be the new base as we move to FY25, or some part of it is really one time, and in that sense, the real base will be lower? That's second. And third, the sense that I got from your commentary for Q4 is that, probably things are not going to play out as per expectation. So if you could, elaborate a bit on that. Thanks.
Tarang, Tushar will take the employee cost piece, right? With respect to volume growth has been pretty steady, across, markets. So no challenge there. With respect to Q4, we have a pretty strong order book on the external side. And like I said, GPL... may come a little softer. Mind you, Q4 last year was a very strong quarter, right? We fired all cylinders in Q4 last year. So given that, right, there's that situation doesn't look like it will pan out again this Q4. So yes, we do expect some softness, but we still have another 2 months to go, right? And the order book is shaping up very nicely. So I'll let Tushar take the employee cost piece.
Yeah. So employee cost, if you see, it is around 12% of revenue. Historically, we were always at around 8.5% to 9% kind of range. This is only current scenario for this 3 quarters that I had mentioned in the last quarter as well in Q2. So this higher employee cost will remain for Q2, Q3 and Q4. We should return back to our normal levels at around 9% from Q1 onwards is our expectation at this stage.
Okay. Thanks, Tushar. Doctor, just a follow-up. In terms of volumes, typically you've grown at anywhere between 15 to 20%. Would that be a similar range for this quarter as well?
Yeah, it's a mix of price and volume, Tarang. Okay. I mean...
Tarang, you can consider it around 4% as the price erosion that we have seen generally, between 3.5% to 4%. The balance will be all volume growth.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Charul Agarwal from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. My first question is with regards to the GPL business. Like the commentary has been that this quarter has been muted and we expect the next quarter also to be slightly subdued. Is there any particular reason to this, and is it only a 1 or 2 quarter phenomenon, or could it extend for longer?
So Charu, GPL has been a bit cyclical. We've seen that, and it's largely driven by the US and European business. Okay. And while, we did see a good uptick, in their US business demand, in the last couple of quarters. This quarter has dipped a little bit. However, if you look at the 9-month, GPL is still tracking at, a little over 13% growth, GPL's business. So it's not bad. They're a pretty strong company across markets, right? So we don't see that this is going to be, any kind of weakness going forward.
Okay, thank you. So that does not imply anything with regards to sales to GLS going down, right? This is just a temporary phenomenon.
No, that varies. Like I said, it's a bit cyclical. It moves up and down, but then, we supply to them for, largely the regulated markets.
Okay. Thank you, sir. So my second question is with regards to the gross margin expansion that you have seen. So would it be possible to break it down into drivers in terms of what proportion of it could be improvement in input costs, what proportion could be mixed?
So if you go from, let's say, a 52% to 57%, right, that delta has been driven partly by improved input prices. And we also announced this new CDMO, business, right, for which we made validation supplies. And so it's a mix where CDMO played a bigger role in, and that CDMO business also has better margins. So these are the two main reasons, the input costs as well as, the mix improvement.
Got it. Even the QOQ gross margin improvement would be these factors only, right? CDMO has been slightly higher.
Yes.
Got it. Also, sir, you mentioned regarding the Red Sea disruption. What could be the possible implications of the Red Sea replication? Would it only be freight costs, or could that impact volumes as well? And how long do you see it at present?
See, right now, out of 3 ships that used to come to Nhava Sheva port from China, okay, only 1 ship is coming to Nhava Sheva, 2 are going directly. Okay, so they don't basically reroute. These are ships coming from the Far East. Okay, so while freight is expected to go up, right, the other impact could be that we might have to stock up, an extra 15 days of inventory. Okay, it hasn't reached that point, but if we have to, we will, just to cover, make sure that we're stocked up well for, supplies. It's not happened yet, Charul, but, right, we are watchful. Okay, it could happen.
And so this could not impact your supplies to your customers? Like you were saying that you might need to stock up for imports, but what about your exports to customers?
That's air. For us, to customers, it's largely air freight. So sea freight doesn't impact us. It's the raw materials that impact us on the sea. Sea freight impacts us on raw materials.
Got it. That is all. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Sure.
Thank you. A reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask questions. The next question is from the line of Ahmed Madha from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. I just want to understand the employee cost part a little better. So there is roughly 40-odd% increase in the cost. So just what is the nature of that? Can you elaborate a little more on that?
Ahmed, I had explained it in the Q2 call. These are certain bonus accruals based on the past performance which have been given by the board. Which are getting accrued over this 3 quarters, and that is what has taken this cost up. And as I also explained in my earlier comments, that the employee cost is coming around 12%. It should come back to around 9%, 8.5 to 9% from Q1 onwards.
Got it. And in the gross margin, is there any impact of PLI incentives this quarter?
PLI again has an impact of about 1 to 1.5% on overall margins. Around 1.5% on overall margins.
Okay. Just on the Glenmark Pharma's business, so I think last year we did about, roughly 690 odd crores. This year, 9 months have been good, but you are saying that, no, you see it to be weak. But overall, say, in the next 2-3 year perspective, should we at least maintain this 650 to 700 crore run rate? How should we look from the medium to long-term perspective about this business?
See, I just answered Charul, right, that basically GPL business is a little cyclical, but nothing alarming, okay? I mean, it's a very strong business that they have in the regulated markets, right? And that continues and, you know, we would continue to service that business.
Okay. So we'll retain our wallet share with them. That is what I want to understand.
Sure.
Is this the correct understanding that we'll retain the wallet share?
Yeah, very much.
Okay, fine. And just question on Q4. So basically, should we sort of at least maintain the annual run rate similar to last year for GPL business?
I can't comment on that.
No. Last year GPL was very high at about 230 crores. We don't expect it to be that high in Q4.
Yeah, but just on the full year basis, I'm talking about.
Full year basis, yeah, we should be able to reach that level.
Okay. Just on the last freight cost part, so I'm just trying to reconfirm that there won't be any sort of P&L impact, but just the amount of inventories which we might need to buy, correct?
I didn't.
Doctor mentioned that the impact on inventory will be about 10 to 15 days, if at all we have to stock it up. We are currently at about 104 days of working capital, which may go up by another 10 days, but we will see how that pans out.
Okay, sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar Manudhane from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, firstly, on the asset turn, sir, for last 2 years, 3 years, now it is down to 2.9, which we used to have at 3.3. So any comment on that?
So Tushar, actually, if you see the years prior to last 2 years, the spend on capex was very limited. Last 2 years, we have seen good amount of capex that we have done. Almost 130 crores in FY22, 160 in FY22. We are already near 100 crores in the current year. And as we had also mentioned that these new assets that come up, they don't immediately get into this 3x kind of revenue generation. Initially, it will be lower. We had also mentioned in the past that, you know, we expect this asset turns to somewhere come down near between 2.5 to 3 gradually, because our capex plans are strong going forward, and that is what we are expecting.
Understood. And secondly, on this ex-GPL business has been stable at about 390 crores average for last now 6 quarters. So any comment in terms of growth on this segment of the business?
No, growth has been good. I mean, we have been growing the external business, right, very steadily. I mean, you know, low teens, you know. So, and that's driven by all our markets. I mean, the reason this is around 10% this quarter is because, like we explained, Japan has degrown and Europe is flat. But the US, LATAM, India and ROW have been firing away because we have been introducing new products. And US CDMO business has very strong. So I mean, the thing is that overall the fundamentals for our external business firstly have got many levers. Okay, markets, products, and CDMO now coming in much better. So with all these levers, I mean, sometimes you don't fire on everything, right?
Sure.
But we have been growing, right? I mean, there's no challenge there.
And this, because it's exports on a constant currency terms, what would be the growth?
The currency hasn't moved much in the last year, right? I mean, we're not getting any currency benefit.
In the current year, we are not getting. Last year, there were certain currency benefits. But this year, it is more like a constant currency, more closer to the constant currency.
Understood, sir. And just lastly, this raw material, lower raw material benefit, any comment in terms of, you know, how long will we have this benefit continue?
It should continue because we have diversified our sources, okay, and that has resulted in the benefit, and that's something that we would continue. So we expect it to play out. Of course, like I said, certain geopolitical challenges, you know, could impact oil prices and so on, and that will hit solvents. And so, I mean, look, there is a bit of, you know, challenge there, but overall, I think we... On the buying raw material side, we should be okay. No great challenge there.
So let's say if this Red Sea disruption, if I leave aside for time being, for the sake of discussion, this impact, so then 56-57% gross margin is very much sustainable, right?
See, again, I explained, right, to Charul, right, that basically the margin improvement, if you take from roughly 52 where we normally are, 52, 53 to 57.7, excuse me, has been largely driven by some improvement on raw materials and then CDMO, the new CDMO business where we made validation supplies. So these things are contributing. Now, so we may not hit 57%, right, next quarter. In fact, we won't. But it will be in the range.
Okay. Thanks a lot for this.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshal Patil from Mirai Asset Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. Sir, just have one question on the CDMO business. We have just recently signed a contract, and this, as per your earlier comments, we've got the minimum offtake value as $5 million USD. So, sir, any specific timelines as to when would this comment? That's question one. And question two would be, sir, if you could speak a bit on the project pipeline for the CDMO business, because I guess we were expecting some two or three projects which were there in the pipeline to be going on stream over the next 1 to 2 years.
Yes, Harshal. So basically, this project should come online next year. We've just made a pretty large validation supply, right, for filing. And this would be filed in multiple markets. So as soon as we start getting approvals and, markets, we'll start supplying. So it should come on next year for sure. Right. As far as the pipeline goes, we have one more project which is very advanced. We hope to sign either in late Q4 or then in Q1. I mean, it's going very nicely. Okay. And then there's one that we have already initiated validation and filings are on, but those are like 53 or 57 markets that they are going to file in, and that we expect to also come next year. Okay, so that would be two more that would come. There are further discussions also on CDMO on other projects. So those discussions are going very nicely, and let's see how that pans out. But to answer your question, I mean, it's two more in the pipeline that we have very clear visibility on.
And the two ones which are there in the pipeline would definitely have better revenue potential than the ones we already are supplying to. If I have to just get some qualitative inputs on that.
Typically, they are ranging between $5 and $10 million. Typically.
Okay.
Right? I mean, our projects are not that big,
right,
but they are decent size, right? And, you know.
Right, sir. Right, sir. That helps. Thank you. Thank you for the input, sir. All the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwini Agarwal from Demeter Advisors LLP. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Dr. Yasser. Good morning, Tushar. Congratulations on a very strong margin performance over the quarter. Just continuing from the last participant, on CDMO, I mean, if you were to, you know, think about it over the next 3 to 5 years, do you think that this piece of the business could be 30-35% of revenues, or do you think generics and CDMO would grow at pretty much the same pace in the medium term?
Okay, Ashwini. Thank you, Ashwini. The thing is that, see, we have a pretty strong generic pipeline and the market spread, right, of the products has only been improving over time. That would continue. So since generics is also going to grow reasonably well, right, and it's a pretty big chunk to begin with, in the next 3 to 5 years, right, at the rate at which we are doing things, we expect CDMO to quadruple. Okay, so around from 150 CR, we are likely to get to 600. But even 600 would not, you know, get to 30-35% simply because, you know, the other piece is also growing well. So if we get to 600, it would still be around 15%, okay, of our overall, right, 15 or even less. So let's see, I mean, with whatever visibility we have now, right, and the strike rate at which we are going on CDMO, we should definitely improve the percentage from the 7-8% that we are at now, but very unlikely we'll go to 30% unless something really earth-shattering happens, okay, which cannot be ruled out, but I'm just going from whatever we are, you know, driving as of now with the current level of investment.
Okay, thank you. And one more follow-up on the CDMO contract that you just signed for which has an expected revenue line of $5 million at the minimum in fiscal 25. If you could share some color on, are you the sole supplier? Is this a technology transfer where the innovator transferred what they knew to you, or you helped develop them? How sticky is this relationship? Would you continue to be the sole supplier in the foreseeable future? If you could provide some color around that.
Okay, so while we didn't do a tech transfer, and that's why the regulatory timeline goes to next year, right? We did do a fair amount of customization for the, you know, to get the business, okay? The thing is, obviously, you know, in our kind of CDMO play, what is important is we match the current supplier of the innovator, okay, which in many cases is the innovator itself, okay, and they are going to stop their own manufacturing and move to us because they get a very large cost advantage. So I don't see any reason why they would continue their old supply. We would be the sole supplier once the regulatory approvals are in place.
And the other CDMO pipeline that you have is of similar nature, where you develop on the cost, you bring down the cost, and, you know, that advantage therefore allows you to foster a longer-term relationship with the customers.
Yes. Of the two that I said, one is a heavily customized API. Mm-hmm. That is already in filings, right, in the filing stage. The other, we are in the process of, you know, doing some further sort of tweaking to, you know, get it, you know, to where the customer is now in terms of their current source.
Okay. And the last question from my side, in the past, you often said that, you know, raw material benefits, whenever they accrue, need to be passed on. But this time around, you know, some of it has flowed through to gross margins. Is this temporary, or do you think this is sustainable, the margin gain that you had on the raw material side?
Ashwini, this raw material, we'll have to see, right? Depends on the pressure of the business, right? But if we are under pressure, we'll have to pass on. So we won't do it as a default, right? But yeah, I mean, if we have to gain a bigger market share or help our customers sustain their market share at the front end, you know, we may pass it on, right? But since this improvement has been pretty broad-based, you know, across many products, right, we're not going to pass on everything.
Okay. No, that gives me a... Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harsh from Bandhan AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So just in terms of this incremental capacity for fourth quarter, the 200,000 liters and the 50,000 liters, for Ankleshwar and Dahej, do we feel that a majority of the cost according to the commercializations is already in place, or do you feel that incrementally you would see a lot more cost coming forward once this gets commercialized, both the capacities?
You're talking about CapEx or you're talking about operational cost?
OPEX.
OPEX. See, I mean, OPEX is not likely to increase greatly. I mean, you know, when we go with the incremental capacity, we are going for bigger batches, okay, at the product level. So in that sense, on a per kilo basis, the OPEX actually improves. But since the volumes are going up significantly, right, that OPEX will scale up according to the volumes, but then, you know, with the improved batch sizes at the per kilo level, it will actually come down. So it will be a sort of midway, you know. It won't go up linearly with the increased capacity. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah. Okay. Lastly, in terms of Japan, you have already highlighted the inventory situation. Anything in particular for Europe market? Is there a lot more price erosion than you anticipated, and which is why we are refraining from selling into European market, or is there something else that is happening?
Europe, see, unlike other markets that have done well, our new product introduction into Europe has been a little slow. Okay, this is largely because of regulatory slowdown. Okay, so we are not getting approvals, our customers are not getting approvals fast enough in Europe. And so while we have a bunch of new products to introduce, right, we've not been able to do that in Europe as well as we've been able to do it in India, LATAM, and the US, you know. So that challenge is there. So hopefully once approvals come through, newer approvals come through, Europe should also pick up well.
Okay, so the primary
reason is price erosion. I mean, to answer your, to confirm, yeah, price erosion in Europe is a little higher, right? So that challenge is there.
Okay, so the regulatory situation is temporary as such, but otherwise we expect that should also pick up going forward.
Yeah, once we get our new products approved in Europe, right, we should see Europe also picking up pretty well. Shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of VP Rajesh from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Most of my questions have been answered, but just one clarification. Dr. Rauji, when you spoke about the CDMO business growing 4x, what was the time frame you were thinking that that growth will come about?
3 to 4 years.
Okay, 3 to 4 years. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aegis from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Rauji. You know, congratulations and thanks for the opportunity. Dr. Rauji, I want to take you back to probably the, you know, initial few conversations you had post-IPO where, you know, you were very articulate in explaining us that how you had migrated customers in the U.S. To address the pricing pressure challenges by moving and introducing second-generation molecules and phasing out the first-generation molecules, thereby, you know, addressing the price erosion. And you had given the example of sartans at that point of time, I remember. So Dr. Rauji, in the journey, in this journey, where have we reached? And it also reference to the point of Europe, because, you know, you mentioned a bit about pricing pressure. So is it that those European customers, we are still in that journey? And could you speak a little bit more about this?
Yeah, it's a very good question. See, the thing is, this whole business of second, third gen processes, right, is something that we have to continue to do. Because on the generic side, right, most markets our customers face a lot of pricing pressure at the front end. So that is something that we continue to do and, with the regulatory filings happening in a timely manner, that is something that has panned out. Because, see, if you look at our price erosion, right, overall in the business, it's about 5 to 6%. Okay. So in order to continue to deliver on margins the way we've been, this is something that we have been doing, and the customers have been very supportive, right? And we continue to keep our customers competitive. That's the name of the game, really. And then, of course, you come back with, you know, you sort of add the launch products to that, and the launch products obviously give you better margins, right? But then the same thing applies even to the new launches, where, you know, we've got to be ready with the next gen process to be able to keep the customers in the game, you know, if they've already sort of entered at a good with a good market share. So it's an ongoing process. I mean, to continue to drive the margins and to keep our customers competitive.
Got it. And Dr. Rauji, how many such, competitors use or follow this approach? Because we've not heard a lot of companies call out this kind of process of trying to upgrade molecules and help customers. And, you know, you had extensively spoken about all those filings where you help them a lot. So who's your key competitor you face who's also following this kind of an approach and where there is competitive pressures or challenges?
So, see, we have about 100 commercial APIs now as we speak, right? Okay. And there's no single competitor that we have in all 100 of these APIs. But in any given API, we would have, you know, one or two competitors, right, in India or China that we'd have to take them seriously. Okay. The good news for us is that because we are in the regulated market space, right, the whole regulatory approval process is a pretty, involved process where we've got to convince the regulators that the next gen process is as good as the earlier process, right? And that takes some doing. So not only from a chemistry perspective, but also from, an overall, specifications, methods, right, controls on genotoxic impurities, you know, all this plays a big role. And so that really thins out the competition for us because the regulators have become much more stringent with respect to, you know, genotoxic impurities. You must have heard about nitrosoamines if you've been following this space. But many of our competitors, fall out because they are not able to successfully address, this whole business of nitrosamines. And we have been, lucky or clever or whatever you want to say, but we've been sort of addressing this upfront rather than, it hits our customer and then the regulator comes back with a big query. So, I mean, net-net, the second, third gen process involves a lot of work, not only on the chemistry side, but on the regulatory side as well. And that's why, we've been able to successfully migrate our customers to the next gen processes with not much competition. I mean, the competition is there. I mean, I like I said, we take them seriously. And, so, I mean, that's the way things are working here at GLS.
Thank you, Doctor. That was very helpful. And, Doctor, one last thing. Since the time you've been listed, the CDMO business has been in broadly a band. And, you spoke about, the breakout towards the 600 crores over the next 4 years. I just wanted to understand that, is it that these 2 years were seeding stages, which, where we were trying to establish our, excellence of products with customers, and that's why you believe the scale-up, or are there any other significant growth triggers or drivers?
So, Aegis, you're spot on, okay? I mean, CDMO does have a long gestation period. And we've got a long pipeline, right, more than 10, 12 projects that are in discussions. But by the time they bear fruit, right, I mentioned about two that are coming online pretty quickly, right? But there's others that are also going to follow, right? So we expect that, we'll have a good number of projects in the next 2 to 3 years. And that's why we are very confident that, we'll get to the 600 crore very comfortably.
Thanks, Dr. Rauji, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. You may press star and one to ask questions. The next question is from the line of Naman Kumar Bhansali from Perpetuity Ventures LLC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Just one question on the USFD inspection that they are going to trigger. So what are the facilities due for USFD inspection and the newer ones which are coming in?
Yeah, so all three facilities that are USFD inspected are due for inspection going by the 3-year cycle. Okay. We expect them anytime at any of our facilities. And so, it should happen anytime. I mean, we are frankly hopeful that it happens soon so that, we kind of, over the hump there, right? But all three, yeah. I mean, they are due.
Got it. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar Bora from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yes. Thanks for the opportunity. And congratulations to the management for a steady set of numbers. Sir, first thing quickly on the CDMO strategy. Historically, as you just explained also on the call, we've been focused more on life cycle management products. Right. Is there any thought, though, to also pursue, pure CDMO opportunities working closely with innovators in new molecules? Any efforts or, steps in that direction?
So, Tushar, I had explained this again at the time of the IPO and we had very, very long discussions on CDMO. But basically, firstly, the gestation on the kind of projects that you're talking about is very long. Okay. Because if you get into phase one and stuff, right, I mean, clinical trials for most drugs, new drugs, take anywhere from 2 to 3 years. And then there is the approval, by FDA, which takes a year because there's a lot of clinical data that they review, right? So it could be like a 12 to 15 month. Plus, what happens is that new products have a huge amount of attrition, okay? I mean, products that are in phase one, I mean, the chances of them becoming commercial are like 1 in 30 or 40 molecules, right? So, I mean, if you don't hit one of those, right, after doing all that work, you still don't have a commercial project, Okay, so this challenge, you know, has been there for this kind of work. Whereas on the life cycle side and the specialty side, right, the it's a much faster, you know, comparatively, the gestation is much sooner. I mean, you know, in about a year and a half to 2 years, you can have a project going, okay, versus the, you know, these early stage projects, you know, it takes much longer, the attrition is much higher, basically. So we stayed away. I mean, the other thing for us, right, is both our R&D infrastructure and our manufacturing platform are common. So we don't have to make any special investment for, you know, these kind of projects. I did mention to, I think it was to Ashwini, right, that we do a lot of tweaking, okay, in terms of customizing the API for the innovator. And here is where, again, it's the, our R&D, you know, work. I mean, our R&D, current R&D setup is good enough to do. You know, so, I mean, we don't make very significant investments also with this approach.
So here, sir, in this specifically, are we developing products and then reaching out to innovators or are we looking at the, you know, areas where we want to target, reach out to the companies first and then take up projects on demand? How do we, you know, target new CDMO initiatives?
Yeah, so we have a whole, I mean, we have 140 APIs in our pipeline and a good portion of them are still, you know, the innovator still has, you know, even after genericization, the innovator still has 20 to 30% global market share. Okay. And so the approach is that, you know, we sort of work with the innovator on those products and give them a nice cost advantage, right, and move the project along.
Correct, sir. Just a clarification. You mentioned specialty as well, along with the pharma. Are we actually targeting any specialty chemicals or, you know, areas beyond pharma in our CDMO initiatives? Is there something you thought?
So, Tushar, in our current pipeline of three commercial products, right, or now I should say four, right, two are of the same specialty.
Okay. Got it, sir. Thank you so much. The one last thing on the overall size of the business. You mentioned CDMO over the next 4 years will go 150 to maybe 600. Overall business will maybe slightly more than double. Since your CDMO business is at much higher margin, the overall gross margin profile should move up or at least remain the same. You know, CDMO should compensate for maybe loss of margin on the generic side. So it's good to assume that we should be at or above the current margin profile as the CDMO penetration improves.
Yeah, that over the long term we can expect that, Tushar.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. I'll join back in.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tarang Agrawal from Old Bridge Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving me time again. So mine is a more generic question. I just wanted to, you know, get some insights from you on how the API landscape is today versus where it was, say, a year and a half back, both from an industry standpoint and from GLS's standpoint as you see it today.
See, the demand environment is growing at 6%. I mean, API stands at about 220 billion overall market. Okay. And that is a pretty nicely growing market. For GLS, because our concentration is on the chronic areas, again, you know, we are very much in sync with how this is growing. So there's a lot of stuff happening now. Anti-cancer was one area where we were not there, but we are rapidly catching up on anti-cancer, right? But apart from that, CVS, CNS, diabetes, and pain are good areas. They are all chronic right? So we continue to drive our portfolio in that direction.
And from a nuts and bolts perspective, how do you see the pricing environment in context of where it was a year and a half back? Clearly, your intermediate or raw mat prices have come off meaningfully. But how do you see the pricing environment for your end products overall? Has it become more aggressive, or you're seeing some element of stability?
No, Tarang, it will always be aggressive. I mean, it's a tough business, but it's a good business. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I mean, we've always, at GLS, we've always recognized that. I mean, look, pricing environment will always be there. Customers will always put pressure on prices, and we have to respond to that, okay? We can't run away from that. So as far as we are well positioned from a technology perspective and a cost management perspective, we are good, right? I mean, the world is not going to be kind to us, okay? Let me put it that way, right? We've got to be smart at it and continue.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir. All the best.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Charul Agrawal from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up. Sir, I wanted to understand more about your complex API products. Firstly, on the beverage oncology block that had been commissioned a couple of quarters back. So what is the kind of traction that we are seeing for the oncology supplies? And next, on the complex API findings, could you help us understand more on the timeline perspective? Like, when can we see them, see some of those getting commercialized?
Okay, so as far as the pipeline for both oncology as well as the complex, right, we continue to fill the pipeline. Okay, with respect to onco, right, we've already validated 3 products, right, and 4 are like actively being, we'll be taking them into validation pretty soon. And the customer interest is also pretty good. So that's going well. On the iron complexes, one has been in regulatory review. Okay, with the customer's file is in regulatory review. And that has also triggered a review of our file. Okay. And we should file soon. Okay, on one more, on one product soon. And another 2 are, we're following up with another 2 in development. So it's going well. Complex is going well. Okay. We have some other, not only iron complexes, but we have other complex molecules, right, on the antifungal side also that have had very good traction more recently. Okay. And that is also picking up well. So, I mean, overall, I would say that this is an area that, both these areas are something that we are aggressively pushing, and we've got good uptake from customers as well.
I've got it. So on the BH oncology block, so currently the capacity is being used for filing validations, or is there any commercial supply at all from that block?
No, see, onco, the volumes are very small, right? So, and in order to, sort of optimize the cost on the manufacturing side, we do make a little more in the validation so that, we can supply even small commercial quantities as it comes up. So we are, right now, we are not in full-fledged commercial manufacturing, but then that onco block is not a very big burden also from the cost perspective.
Got it. Thank you, sir. That answers my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to paucity of time, that was the last question. Thank you, members of the management. On behalf of Glenmark Life Sciences Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.